Locked On Podcast Network.
And we're back. It's another week, so we have to do the film thing. Welcome back to Locked On Chiefs. Check out the rest of the podcast network for us, but we are lucky, as per usual, on a recording day. You're going to hear this a day late, later than you usually do, but Seth Kaiser's with us from Arrowhead Pride, and he's going to give us the lowdown. How are you, pal?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing tonight?
Yeah, keeping it together. Chris, what do you think?
I'm here. It's the bye week, you know.
It's going to be a long bye week.
It's a time for introspection. So,
yeah, it would have been really nice to go into the bye week with a W, but I got to tell you, they need this bye week like bad.
Yeah, but isn't it kind of funny? Because I look back at stats because people were talking about Andy in the bye week. He doesn't usually go into the bye week with a win.
I didn't know that.
He usually loses before the bye week and wins out of it. So,
You
know, I heard that on Philly radio. Do we know what the record is?
I looked at it. I didn't get it charted though. But
no, that's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
it would have been, man. I would have felt. Look, 6-3. The Chiefs are way ahead in the AFC West, but. That was a gross game. It wasn't even a fun game. I mean, outside of Hill's freak play, that was awesome. It was just not a fun game to watch, by and large. The pass rush looked anemic. Mm-hmm. Coverage wasn't good. Alex didn't look good. The O-line didn't look good. I mean, it was just overall just not a fun game to watch, honestly. I haven't recorded the Chief in the North yet this week just because.
Are you traumatized?
Well, I just didn't feel like rewatching the game. You know, normally what I do on Sunday, I'll watch the game, then I'll rewatch the game, then I'll take some mailbag questions and I'll record that. Well, Ryan, you know that. I send it to you super late at night asking you to help me. But I just didn't want to rewatch it. I was just like, you know, I really don't want to rewatch it. Are you guys all okay? You know, I asked my followers on Twitter, you guys okay with me waiting a day? And a lot of them said they preferred that I wait until I had access to the film. And I said, great, that's what I'm going to do. Because I did not feel like rewatching a game that had maybe, 10 total fun snaps to watch.
Right. Yeah. It was pretty, it felt to me like waiting for them to get their act together the whole time. I think they showed up there unprepared mentally, like knowing the bye was coming and thinking that maybe they had it up on this team. And I don't know, man, it didn't seem like they got off the bus.
I would very much agree with that assessment. They were just outplayed in so many facets. So,
let's start on the positive side, because I did like a few things, and I know this is going to sound strange, at least to start the game, that they did on defense. I've been concerned about this all season. Chris will just continue to give me a cue so I can tee up Dan Sorensen, which I'm not going to do, because Dan Sorensen played fine against the Cowboys as far as I could tell. Now granted, I haven't watched the 22, but what did you think about what they did schematically?
I noticed they brought in Pierre Lewis and put him up in that, rather than having a hybrid safety / linebacker up front in nickel packages, they had an actual linebacker.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that. Now, what it did is I believe it brought Murray off the field.
Yes.
Sorensen still played a ton of snaps. He just played in a more traditional safety role, which is kind of interesting. Because, I mean, I think a lot of people would have guessed it would have been Sorensen who came off the field. But Murray's been struggling. Yeah. So, I liked it. I think one thing that got lost because of the way the game went along is early on especially, and even later in the game, they really were much better against the run than they have been. Now, they weren't able to stop Dallas on a couple of long drives in the second half, but that was a lot due to Dak Prescott.
Mm-hmm. He played well against the Chiefs, I think.
He did. He really did a good job. And so I liked some of the adjustments that I saw. They actually, it was kind of funny because someone tweeted to me that the Chiefs needed to, you know, swap in a linebacker. And then I retweeted that, you know, with a quote above it saying they also need to look at more five-man fronts, you know, three defensive linemen and then Holly and Houston on the outside. You know, like I think, you know, the bear front or whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And we saw more of that, too.
Yep.
And overall, I thought it did a pretty good job. The secondary just, man, Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I thought Ragland played pretty well in the base. I did see him take some of the passing down, you know, big nickel snaps. But between he and KPL, I like that combination playing next to Derek. And I think that's we've been talking about it being, you know, the combination that may prove out to be your starters going forward once Derek decides that he's done. But I think it was promising for both those guys in particular.
I would agree. I like the way they played. Hopefully that's an adjustment they continue to make. They've got a couple weeks here. They really need it to kind of figure out schematically what this team wants to be, because they've seen some things that don't work. And I think what they did against Dallas could work. What they need to do is swap out Acker for Terrence Mitchell. Like now. And continue to do what they were doing and tinker with the idea of Murray as the deep safety instead of Sorensen, because I'm not sure Sorensen gets it done as a deep safety, but at least tinker with it. I think you do that and you're going to end up with a better overall defense, because Dak Prescott is a good quarterback. They got to figure out something with the pass rush though too.
Yeah. Well, let's start down the line. Chris, where do you want to start? All those things were good points.
Ryan, I'll play right into your hands. Go right ahead and talk about the inside linebackers.
Well, I think that gave us the impression that they can do this going forward, keeping six guys in the box. And I like what you said about the five-man fronts. Bare fronts where you can cover up the A-gaps and have guys inside against a team you want to try and have run against you, that they want to do that. That helps. So I'm comfortable with that. I think it's a toss-up. I agree with you. I think Terrence Mitchell is probably the better overall player than Acker. Let me ask you this. Do you think that this time away, this time to watch from the sidelines and get a bit different perspective is something that's going to help him and make him I don't know. We'll talk about what I think about him. But in general, make him a better player against the pass in the future, because I think they have to have corner support to play those inside linebackers.
They really do. You know, I have no idea whether it'll make him better. One would hope so. You know, with some players, you know, this is all a mental game. Some players, it'll knock their confidence out from underneath them, and that's not good. You know, Terrence Mitchell, he's been through enough in this league. I don't think a benching is going to do that to him. Here's what I know. Watching him versus Acker on film, you know, Mitchell was giving up catches, and he gave up some penalties and all this stuff. But there were some really great catches that he forced. Acker, generally speaking, when his guy catches the ball, that dude is wide open. And I'll at least take a guy who's contesting and making it difficult. You know what I mean? Whereas I don't think Acker has it.
And that's fair. I don't know that Acker's on a lot of the rosters in the NFL, to tell you the truth. And I was thinking he might be somebody that got cut in training camp, but they like him enough that they kept him. Clearly over DJ White. Which I took as a little bit of a surprise, but I think overall for the defense, you have to have somebody that you can trust to be the number two when you have to move Nelson inside. And if you're going to play six guys defending in the run or in some kind of combination to try to get pressure, like you were talking about, because that's got to be shored up as well. And I think that has to come from other than outside linebackers. Then you're talking about playing a five-man shell. Cover two, man under, some of the more combo zones, you know, but you got five and that's all you're going to have.
Oh.
No?
Yeah, I like it.
Okay. Well, that was way less than I expected.
I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Okay, well, let me stir it then.
Okay, Ryan's not used to you agreeing with him, so...
Yeah, I could tell that really threw you off.
Yeah, I was a little – I'm sorry. I didn't – that made me skip a beat there. I apologize, folks. yeah, I'm used to arguing. So, all right, well, then let's get into this, because I like what you said, and I agree with you personally. I don't think Dan Sorensen should be playing the back of the defense. I talked about this yesterday. You put him in that robber role, a guy that you can bring down into not necessarily in the box, but close to it, like you've seen Barry do over the years. I think that's great. Mm-hmm. But I'm hoping that this gives Eric Murray a little bit of distance, a little bit of perspective. What do you think? I mean, would you opt to do that if you're calling this defense, to try and swap those guys out if it means Sorensen not playing as much?
What I would try first and foremost, I would try shifting Sorensen to a bit more of a robber role and let Parker try single high more often.
Mm-hmm.
I like Parker. I think Parker's a good player. I think he's got good range. I think he's got pretty good instincts. And they already asked their corners to do so much that single high doesn't scare me that much. Where they're really getting roasted, it seems, a lot of the time is across the middle of the field. And on some quick developing routes and on, you know what I mean? And so it would be great to have someone in that robber role to occasionally take away some of these routes that are killing them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Parker's got the juice to play single high. And so I wouldn't mind seeing them do more of that. Maybe have Parker single high shaded a little bit more towards Peter's side of the field. With Sorensen in a robber role on the other side. Now, you're risking giving up some deep balls there, yep, for sure.
Yep.
But, I mean, force teams to beat you making the toughest throw in the game. You know, I understand big plays were beating them early this year, but I death by 1,000 paper cuts isn't really any better, as we discovered against Dallas.
Right.
And so
it makes it harder for your offense because you don't have the ball as much.
Right. And so, I think that would be one thing to do. At the end of the day, one thing I do believe as we go forward, I just think we're seeing some cracks in the foundation of the talent level on defense, especially at the safety position. We're seeing the limitations of guys as they're being asked to do more than what they can really do. Mm-hmm. And that's the real problem for the defense. They're just being asked to do things they can't necessarily do. DJ taking a big step back in his play level and Eric Berry being injured really shook the foundation of this defense because it was built around both of them playing at a high level.
Yeah. Now it's time to adapt and overcome. Somebody has to step in, yep, and learn new skills.
Absolutely. And Sutton needs to, and he's showing, honestly, Sutton, Ryan, you and I have talked a bit about, various things that we'd like to see done better. But I do think Sutton gets a bit of a bad rap as far as failing to adapt. Cause we saw it, like you said, we saw more single gap, one gap defense against the Cowboys. We saw him implementing some schematic and personnel changes. Mm-hmm. I think maybe he's a little slow on the uptake, but I feel for him because, you have people saying, well, you should have designed your defense around one or two guys, but everyone designs their defense around their stars.
Yeah. I mean, that's part of planning, but I agree with you. My only problem is I don't think he's a little slow. I think he's extremely slow. I think you could have made some of these changes in week 4 or 5.
Right. Seeing that, okay, clearly Sorensen and Murray. To be fair, I think part of what slowed it down, I think Eric Murray played pretty well out of the
initially
gate.
Yeah,
and so I feel like, I don't know if he's taken a step back or if teams have figured out how to pick on him specifically, but that's been tough. And I mean, the big thing and the thing that I can't really blame Sutton for is the defensive line just isn't what we thought it would be. How many snaps did Dak Prescott just stand there and survey,
right?
And at a certain point, you can't blame the secondary for not being able to cover for 5 full seconds. And it's not like it's 5 seconds where he's got to run around, right?
And
we're talking 5 seconds where he's like standing there. Although, to be fair, poor Alan Bailey must have missed like 3 sacks.
Yeah, I know.
Because Dak is just fast.
Well, and at least Alan's getting there. I didn't see enough penetration, yeah, from R&R. I didn't see Chris Jones beating his guy, let alone a double team, often enough.
Right. And, Houston was real quiet from the edge.
Let me throw a wrench in your conversation. Is that Dallas's line or is it the Kansas City Chiefs defensive line?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep. Because Dallas's offensive line is very good.
Yeah.
I think it's been a pretty consistent issue this year with the defensive line, though, regardless of who we've played.
No, and I don't disagree with that. I just thought I would ask the question.
But here's the thing. The guy who generated the most pressure against Dallas was Frank Zombo, for God's sake.
Yeah. Although one thing that I'm looking forward to, especially since there's a bye week for him to continue to get healthier, Tomba looked like he had some juice. He was moving a little more than he forced Smith into some tough spots, and I liked that. Now, to be fair, I don't know how many snaps he played because he only popped to me like 3 or 4 times, and so if it turns out he played
voluntarily, he played 23 snaps, a third of the defensive snaps.
Okay, then that's not a bad number to pop considering I don't know how many of them were pass rush, etc. And so, yeah. And again, going up against Smith is a tough out. But he looked like he had a little burst in his step.
And I agree.
That's encouraging.
And here's my only question to you is, do you think that's enough? I can't help but look at him and feel like he's a guy approaching a cliff. Like, he's not going to wind down and slowly wear down. He's going to play well one week, and I think he's going to not play worth a dang the next.
I'm not sure. I didn't see that when I reviewed his film from last year. He definitely wasn't quite what he was. But he and again, I'd have to go back and review the film again from last year. But he looked like he had a bit more of a burst in his step than he did a lot of last season. And so I feel like this – because, you know, they never really talked about exactly what was wrong with him, right? Mm-hmm. It was just kind of – this really did feel to me like a you're old. Let's get you longer rest than you've had for years, right? Because, I mean, when was – I mean, Tomba, he was – he always played. I mean, I can't remember the last time.
He had to.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. On a lot of those defenses, he was the only shining light. And so I almost feel like this is one of those, like, look, you've struggled down the stretch, you know, the last few years. And I know Tomba wasn't happy about only playing 7 snaps against the Steelers and all that. But it's like, okay, why don't we give you literally almost a full year off? Let's give you, you know what I mean, to where you're not practicing. Because, look, Tom is not going to get out of shape. You know, that's just not who he is.
Right.
And so let's let those knees. Now, are those knees ever going to heal up completely? Of course not. But you give him a little rest. Give him a little time to where maybe, so now he comes back for an 8-game stretch or a 7-game stretch or, 8-game. And maybe be able to go full throttle for those. So I think that's one reason why they played him a little bit before the bye. Just kind of see how it goes. Then we'll rest for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Then see how it goes. So I'm curious about that. That was encouraging to me because he looked okay out there. He had a few snaps where he made them pretty uncomfortable. Smith had to have a really nice recovery twice on Holly, where Holly just beat him. And Smith is just, man, he's tough.
Yeah, he's such an athlete too.
He's so athletic. He's able to recover where almost no one else would be. And so I took encouragement from that. But overall, the pass rush, Houston, I have not gone back and rewatched Houston. I don't know if they had him in coverage a ton. I don't know what happened to him. But I did not notice him, like, throughout the game other than a couple of run stops.
Well, I think we can both take a long look at that. I look forward to talking about that next week. But I thought Tomba didn't show as much rust as I thought he would. And Chris, I know you talked about it yesterday. Who did you think did show rust on the opposite side of the ball?
LDT.
I could agree with that.
I mean, he didn't have the normal fire. He didn't have the normal power that you're used to seeing. He wasn't out there leading the way on things. Of course, they never really got a lot of runs that gave them the opportunity to go out and lead the way on things either.
Period.
But that was a problem too. Yeah.
I think you're right. I haven't watched him specifically, but he didn't pop at all. And man, he was playing. I mean, he was one of the best guards in the league prior to going down. He was playing unbelievably well. Mm-hmm. I think we would have seen more. Dallas was defending the run really well in the first half, and then the Chiefs came out. They ran the ball 3 times on their first drive, and they had 3 positive plays, right? I think there was like an 18-yard gain, a 4-yard gain, and a 6-yard gain. Those are all positive running plays, right? You know, 4 more is good. Under 4 is not so good. You know, it's kind of a pretty basic math. And then they just stopped.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They just stopped running the ball. And I get it. You know, they took that deep shot to Tyreek Hill on first down on their next drive. And I get that. I like being aggressive. But you know what? You can run the ball on 2nd and 10. You really can. And they just, they just stopped. And you can run the ball with 10 minutes left in the fourth.
Yeah, and regardless of the play call of the situation, I think you have to be smarter. And this is on Reed, in my opinion. I think you have to be smarter in your usage of Hunt. You don't necessarily have to be running the ball to have him on the field. He can pass block. He's done it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he should be pass blocking every single down, but he's also a weapon in the passing game. Use him for that, because you take one of your best weapons off the field when you put him on the bench. Because, sorry, West is not Hunt. He's not going to scare people near as much as Hunt will.
Yeah. No, and I agree. There's a real problem. There's a real problem when teams are able to anticipate what you're doing based on your personnel. And when they bring West onto the field, they're not really afraid of the run.
Right.
And I like West, but he's not nearly the runner that Hunt is. Good receiver, but you're telling your hand. And by putting Hunt in basically only when they plan on running, the defenses are keen on him.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, they weren't really made to pay for it. There were a couple plays in the second quarter especially, where they ran some play action stuff with Hunt, and it was really having the desired effect of sucking that zone in. And that was one thing Tony Romo talked about. You know, okay, well, what do you do against zone? Play action is going to suck zone defenders up more than man coverage, right? Because they're all staring at the backfield. It's just even the most disciplined defense, it's going to affect them more. Or you just run the ball down their throat. And so they didn't do any of the things that they could have done.
Well, and the other side of it is you have another Hunt that you can put in. Granted, he doesn't know the offense necessarily near as well as West does, but I think Akeem Hunt gives you a different dimension of running back as well. And then you don't necessarily have to tip your hand. I mean, you may run it, you may pass it. He's great out of the backfield catching the ball too.
It would be interesting to see what he could do. I don't know. I haven't seen enough of him to have an opinion on that one way or another.
I'd like to see him so that I can develop an opinion. I think that's where I'm at this point.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
We're all grasping at straws.
Well, ultimately, and
isn't that what the bye week's for?
Yeah,
it really is. Well, let me ask you guys this: unsung hero on the outside. How far has DeMarcus Robinson come?
I like how he looks. He made a tough catch on the sideline where he dragged his feet really well. I like his route running. He had a couple plays where he broke open that Alex missed him, which unfortunately has been a bit of a weekly occurrence. Now, not as much against Oakland and Denver, but against Pittsburgh and Dallas, there were a few times where it's like, dang it, Robinson's open. And then there's been other plays where because of pressure, like inescapable pressure, that kind of thing, where Robinson, you know, Alex never had a chance to see him, or where he went to another read that was fine and Robinson broke open. And so I'd like to see him as a little more of a primary read because he looks like he's getting open to me.
I agree with you completely. And that's super.
But isn't this Chris Conley part two?
Nah. I'm all about the one syllable answers today.
Yeah, what's with you? Wow.
I don't know. I was trying to be funny there. I don't think so. Conley didn't get separation nearly as often as Robinson, in my opinion. I kind of never really bought into the narrative that Conley was open all the time.
Okay, Ryan, go ahead.
I'm not even going to touch that.
Oh, did you think he was open all the time?
Not all the time, no, but I think he was open a lot more often than, and I think it's partly by definition. Chris Conley's open because the length of his arms, about half a yard less than all the other receivers on this roster, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So I see targets he could have had. I won't say he was wide open, but targets that he could have had.
Oh, absolutely. And I wish Conley would have gotten more opportunities. Conley's talented. Personally, I think Conley is a guy who on the right roster, I think he's a 1,000-yard receiver. He's great with contested catches, incredibly strong hands, great jumper, long arms, pretty lanky guy, and he's also become very strong. So like press coverage doesn't bother him. Conley's got talent. I think Robinson is a better receiver for Alex Smith, though.
Yeah, I think, and that's what it comes down to. When Pat Mahomes inherits this team eventually, if Chris Conley is still, you know, physically healthy and doing what he does, I think that changes the perspective for him quite a bit.
I'll be honest. I really do believe, and this is unfair to Alex Smith because, you know, it's always to see, you know, visions of Mahomes dancing in our head, you know. But I personally think a receiver group of Hill, Conley, and Robinson could be a track meet. I really do. With Kelsey in there terrorizing people. I'm just not I don't know if Alex is quite going to – well, he's not going to have Conley, obviously. But for whatever reason, he and Robinson can't seem to get on the same page consistently. Overall, I mean, we talked about this a little beforehand. Alex just had a tough time against Dallas. That was – besides Pittsburgh, and I might even put this as his worst game of the year, maybe worse than Pittsburgh.
Really?
Yeah, he missed – I think it was 8 was the final count I got of missed shots down the field where he just missed open receivers. And I got a few GIFs on Twitter where it's just like, dang it, you know, and I get it. I mean, because the offensive line didn't have a good game either. But we've seen Alex overcome that this year, right? You know, against Washington and Philadelphia, especially. And even like say against San Diego, Alex was under pressure a lot, but he didn't play as poorly. He didn't play real well, but he was kind of average, you know? Whereas this game, I mean, he had like 4 or 5 happy feet snaps where he just, I mean, and again, one could say, well, it's because the pressure was getting to him. And I get that, but we've seen better from Alex. We've seen him like against Washington, like he was getting hit. And he like got right back up and was just slinging it. So we know he can do better.
Can I play devil's advocate for a second?
Sure.
One thing that we've talked about multiple times throughout the offseason, headed into the season and, you know, during the preseason was, you know, how is Alex Smith going to play when we get to the regular season? Is he going to play well? Is he going to be able to hold off Patrick Mahomes, who looked fantastic at times during the preseason?
Yeah, he did.
And what you saw from Alex is he came out and he played the best football he's played in his career.
Yeah.
Is it possible he's just gotten comfortable again?
I've never bought the idea, you know, that the shift with Alex was somehow mental. I've never bought that. And maybe he really, even though he comes across as a pretty chill guy, I think if you really look him in the eyes, I mean, and again, never met him face to face. I don't know. I'm just gauging this based on what I see in his eyes during the game. That dude's intense. He hides it well, but he's intense. Well, like, you remember he said in an interview that he tries to listen to stuff to, like, gear him down before a game?
NPR, of all things.
Yeah, because he's so amped up already.
I mean, you can see his intensity, and this is not the best example, but that game against San Diego where he led him back to victory. I mean, he showed his intensity right after that game, and I understand you can see that throughout the season, but...
He finally let it out that game. It felt like he kind of lost that reservedness that he kind of has. I have a hard time believing that he would feel comfortable enough to revert. Cause what if they come out of the bye and he has a bad game? The clamor will begin. Heck, the clamor already began, which is not fair. It really isn't. And now the clamor is mostly from fans that feel like he played badly against Denver, which is just absolutely not true. You know, box score, schmock score. I wrote about like a 3,000 word, you know, novel about this on Arrowhead Pride that Alex was actually dealing against Denver. He played well. There were just a series of he was robbed of 2 touchdowns outright.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole nother story. You know, Ross Travis, get your hands up, dude. But you know, and then Demetrius Harris.
Stop. Just stop. We're not going to tight ends.
That was so bad. Oh, that was such a bad drop. Oh, it was so bad. Oh, man. It was so bad. I mean, I knew the Chiefs were going to win, so I found it funny.
I'm glad you did.
But I was just like, oh, this is so awful. But anyway, and so I think a lot of people are like, well, you know, the offense seems like it's stagnating. And it is starting to look familiar, right? Unfortunately, like what we saw against Dallas looked familiar.
Yeah.
And that's not good for lack of a better term. And I'm not saying it's all on Alex. I don't think it is. But like when you see on the plays where Dak Prescott did get pressured, you see him running around and throwing it off bounce 20 yards down the field. And you could see the difference. And again, Alex has played real well this season, but you could see the difference in arm talent between Dak and Alex.
Mm-hmm.
Like the speed that the ball gets there with Dak is, I mean, man, that guy's got an arm.
Well, and the other thing that stood out to me is that Alex looked a bit out of sorts with the pressure in his face, because one of the things in particular, one of the sacks was when he tried to tuck it and run, but wasn't aware what was going on, ran himself right into a sack as Mitchell's guy pulled off of him, Schwartz's. And that's something he used to do in years past. And that was the moment where I was like, oh, wait a minute. He's not new Alex today.
Yeah. I was doing that to you again. No, he really, it wasn't what we've seen. Now here's where my concern is, and this, I can understand why people are concerned. If we want to be picky, we can say now two times in 4 weeks, we've seen, 2016 Alex. And that, I know that's concerning for people, and it's concerning for me, and it's tough for people because, yes, he's got a much larger sample size of games where he's played well this year, but he had a whole year of games outside of two or three notable exceptions where he didn't play particularly well last year. And so for people, a lot of people believe, from what I'm seeing in my mentions, what I'm seeing in Arrow Pride, is that this is a regression to the mean, that Alex really did. And I mean, it was kind of cool. Like, everyone was uniting, like, especially after the Houston game, everyone was like, yeah, Alex is playing like a freaking stud. Like, no one was debating it anymore. But the fear that everyone had was, this is an outlier. And I think the fear people have right now is what we saw earlier this year an outlier because Andy Reid's offense was winning so much?
Also known as an outlier?
Not in Minnesota.
What? You guys pronounce it outlier?
It lies outside of the mean.
Yeah.
It's not spelled A-R.
But in America, we say outlier.
Oh, jeez.
No, hey, it's
in Minnesota, we pronounce words correctly.
Because there's an H in Herb. I get it.
Outlier. What are you? Outlier? Is it the Final Frontier?
Yes, that too.
Two? Star Trek? Space, the Final Frontier. Golly. I'm so glad I thought of a word quickly.
Yeah, that was good. Wow.
Thank you.
But speaking of outliers, I want to bring up one stat, because of all the stats that I track, this...
You're an outlier.
Yes, well, you just mumble it. Okay, fine.
She said it right.
Yeah. Well done.
Okay,
well done.
Sorry. Sorry. Go ahead. Sorry. Go ahead.
Caught him something, Ryan. I'm impressed.
So one of the things that I track the most is differentials. And
yeah,
this is the key, because as I go back and look at what's happened, especially the last 4 weeks, there's one stat that is consistent with wins and losses, and that is not like you would expect the turnover differential. They have lost every game where they gave up more sacks than the defense produced.
I could see that.
And I think that's really what it comes down to, it, because as we've been talking all night, it's either protection for Smith so Smith can do what he's trying to do in this new version of himself.
Yep.
And getting to the opposite quarterback. And I think that's really if you're going to boil it all down, that's the thing that stands out to me the most.
I think there's a lot going on with that. I think you're very correct. Obviously, pressure on the quarterback is going to be one of the biggest factors in any game in today's league. I'm not sure. I find myself in a situation where I'm just very not sure what the future looks like for the Chiefs this year, because we've seen them look great. And we've seen them look decisively mediocre, and we've seen them look good. You know what I mean? It's just kind of like they're just this schizo team. They need to find an answer for teams flooding the shallow zone, because I feel like that's part of what's precipitating higher sack numbers for Alex. It's causing him to hesitate.
Because it's his first read, right?
Right. And I feel like he's not trusting his eyes as much. Teams have had some success throwing Alex off. Since they played Pittsburgh, every single game, the other team has tried more zone than what the Chiefs are accustomed to seeing. Like, Tony Romo's pointed it out multiple times. Man, they lose every time he announces a game, by the way. So that's love what he does, but man.
I said that on yesterday's show, I believe.
Yeah, I wish
they are not very good when Romo's calling the game. So
yeah, it's embarrassing because he does a good job calling the loss.
How much do you enjoy listening to him? I know it's a little off topic.
I really enjoy it. It reminds me, only he's a little more out there. It reminds me of listening to Trent Green during the Chiefs preseason games. Or in some of the time when he's on CBS or whatever. Green does a great job breaking down what things looked like after a play. Romo is a little more bold in saying, oh, this is what's going to happen, this, this, and this. But what I like about what both of them do is they really provide a slightly more in-depth, and sometimes way more than slightly, explanation of what's happening out there. And, you know, I had someone say, well, what they're saying isn't that in-depth, which, you know, the well actually people just, well, whatever. Anyway,
I'm just glad you didn't say, well, actually.
Yeah, well, actually, it is a lot more in-depth. But it's way more in-depth than what you get anywhere else. And so I like listening to him. I just wish it weren't always during Chiefs losses. Because, like, and what's cool for him, like, that, what I really found fun was after that Tyreek Hill touchdown, he was, like, giddy afterward.
Yeah, he was.
He was like, I have never seen anything like that. And he just, you could see his passion for the game when he's like, look at this design here. Like, cause it was unique. I really do think Andy Reid might have just revolutionized the Hail Mary and changed the way teams need to cover it. Because that was such a smart play design. Now, to be fair, does it work with anyone not named Tyreek Hill? I'm not sure.
That's the thing. I don't think it does. There's Devin Hester, but he's tired.
Yes. Yeah.
And retired, I think.
Well, right? He's probably tired. he did a lot of running in his career. He's probably tired. So, right. I mean, it was just a good example of the fact that Andy really is an innovator. This idea that Andy's stuck in his ways and doesn't shift. I really, you know, there are so many people that are out there that are blaming Andy for the backslide the team's taken. And I am more convinced than ever that blaming the head coach is a convenient scapegoat. It's the same what a lot of people do when they just blame the quarterback automatically.
Yeah.
Because Andy has shown he is an innovator, and so many teams are copying things the Chiefs are doing this year.
Well, right. And as soon as they do, no more shovel passes, right?
Yeah. And yeah, you notice that? I mean, we've seen like one in the last 4 weeks. Another thing, why are we not seeing more of the speed option that we saw against Denver?
Oh, I know.
That pistol,
especially when you have an upfield team like Dallas coming at you and getting through.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord. I was screaming at the television.
That drove me nuts because Alex is an excellent speed option quarterback because he's a great threat to run with his legs, obviously. And he's a really good ball handler, too, which, again, sounds like a made-up thing. And I think we've talked about this before. But he is really – being able to just flip that shovel at the last second, that's art.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
And when you've got guys that are such a threat to run like Kareem Hunt, I don't understand why we're not seeing that 4 or 5 times a game, because that is really tough to stop, especially, like you said, with a downfield team like the Cowboys and like a lot of NFL teams are now, because you're probably going to end up, at worst case scenario, with Kareem Hunt with one-on-one with a secondary player. Mm. And I mean, crap, does he not win that 9 times out of 10?
Exactly. How many missed tackles could he have?
Oh, and so that's been driving me crazy. I would like to see more because, those first two drives against Dallas were brutal. I mean, like, the plays had no shot.
Yeah. Well, and I think he left a lot on the table. Like you said, he's been running more zone, especially cover two deep. And if you're calling the plays, how do you beat cover two?
Well, it depends.
You go with the middle, right?
Seems right, close. Yeah. With these flooded shallow zones that teams are doing, yeah, you attack the seams.
Right. Send Kelsey. I mean, Tariq lines up in the slot plenty. Send them both straight down the middle at both the safeties and see what happens.
Yeah,
but that's not something that he seems to want to do in the combinations that he's laying out for Alex to have choices to throw at. And I wish they would be more aggressive down the middle.
I do too. We're going to have to see because teams are going to keep doing what Dallas did. They are absolutely going to keep doing it. Now, not everyone will be able to execute it successfully. The Raiders tried it, right? And that didn't work out for them. Denver did it with more success. And then they end up shifting back to their man coverage stuff. But, you know, I think the Chiefs are going to see a lot more zone. And, you know, we were talking a little beforehand. It's outside my pay grade to talk about how best to beat shallow zone floods and cover twos. That's just, I'm not comfortable saying, oh, well, if you just do this, this, and this, that's a smart football question, right? That's not me. That's just outside my pay grade. But that's just a bit more in depth than I tend to get. But I will say, like you said, attack the middle of the field. That's a great first step. You can also some of it's going to fall on Alex to make throws before guys come open, because that's what happens with zone coverage. You gotta make the throw as they come open. Like that sack that Alex took, or not the sack that he took, the interception that he threw to Kelsey, or was trying to throw to Kelsey.
Right.
There was a window there, and Alex didn't pull the trigger. Instead, he kind of ticked and then threw.
So you think it was a late delivery that caused that interception?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. It just gave him time, because he was clearly looking to go to Kelsey the whole way. Kelsey broke open. Man, you got to let that thing fly. And I tried looking, and it didn't look to me like he thought someone was in his throwing lane. But here's the problem. If you either throw that right away or you don't throw it. Because that window was going to close way too quick, and that's exactly what happened. Had Alex chucked that, you know, 0.2 seconds earlier, that's a complete pass, and the Chiefs are in business. And so he's going to have to be more aggressive. We know he can. We've seen it. But for whatever reason, these, you know, one thing that Alex does very well, and Andy Benoit is always talking about this, regardless of what you think of Andy Benoit, I do think this is a good point he makes of Alex. Alex makes a living diagnosing defenses pre-snap. And he's much more successful with that with man concepts than zone, from what I'm seeing.
Clearly, especially when you have guys who can break that man coverage a lot easier than the zone.
Correct. And they do need to get better at drifting into open zones, the receivers do, because they're almost trusting their routes too much.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think Kelsey did a pretty good job of that, but I agree with you, the wideouts do.
Yes, the wideouts do more specifically. That's not something that I've seen. Robinson does schoolyard ball well, but, you know, breaking out of a zone is like pre-schoolyard ball. You got to be ready to do it before the quarterback breaks the pocket.
Right.
And so I'm really curious. It would not surprise me if they came out of the bye looking fairly different.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Chris, anything else we should cover before we get into the nitty gritty next week?
Yeah, I think we're going to hit an hour on the show if we cover anything else before we get into the nitty gritty. So
that's kind of where I was going with this too. Well, folks, then we are going to cut it off, or we will sit here and chat all night. So we'll be back with you next week. We'll have Seth back, and we'll get more productive and be less. I don't want to look at the film. I will have seen it by then, I promise.
Hey, at least he's on it.
But, right? Hey, but thanks for being with us again, Seth, especially. Enjoy your bye week as well.
Yes, thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me as usual.
And thanks, folks. Thanks for listening. Make sure you're subscribed. Enjoy your bye week. We have tons coming for you. Matt Derrick's going to be with us really soon. And thanks for listening today. We will talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Chiefs podcast. While you're out there, give us a rating or review. And reach out to us on Twitter, at Ryan Tracy NFL and at Chris Clark NFL. We'll talk to you next time.